You're listening to the Working It Out podcast, part of the Humours of Hit Network. I'm Alex, and I'm here to look into what inspires those we look to for motivation. I want to understand their real relationship with physical activity and the barriers they've had to break through to be happy, but also successful. Today, we have the paratriathlete, gold medalist and celebrity SAS Who Dare Wins winner, Lauren Stedman. We talk about everything from Flamengo socks to the Rio Olympics, family support and the temptations of university. We find out about the real person behind the serial winner, and I can't wait for you to get to know her. It's really an honour to have you here today. Welcome to the podcast, Lauren Stedman.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really happy and honoured to be here and have a little chat and discuss all walks of life.
Perfect. So what we're going to do today is first welcome you into the Humans of Hit community, because we are a community of people who come together and just enjoy physical activity. So with that, we ask all of our members to bring one special item from their relationship with physical activity and working out, that item that we then put in the Humans of Hit locker. So we would like to ask you what one item you would bring. And if to get you thinking, some things that I've kind of said is like, if throughout your life, if you had a comfort blanket that you used to use to go to training, or you've got for yourself, if you've got a specific bike that was the bike, or it could be any item, doesn't matter on size, we've got a big locker.
I actually have one. I haven't had one for like all of my journey as an athlete, but I started one last year. I was at Tokyo Test Event in Rio, and basically they got switched from a triathlon to a duathlon. So all of a sudden you can wear socks because you're not in the water, so you can put socks on. Everyone else had these really cool professional ankle socks, and like, you know, the cycling ones that are tight, you know, streamlined. I had a set of Flamingo H&M socks. And I only went and won the test event. So now they are like my sacred Flamingo H&M socks that I wear when I have to do a really tough session. Kind of they've become my good luck charm now.
That's absolutely amazing. I could have written down probably 100 things and I would never have put Flamingo socks. So how does H&M know? Surely you've got to get something with that.
You can tag them in this podcast and they'll know that the special socks.
Yeah, hopefully we both get a set of pair of Flamingos. I've actually seen the ones. I think I've got my half Becca, a pair of avocado ones that are quite similar. But yeah, that's an amazing start. And
yeah, who needs sports socks? You know, aero, all this, nah.
So how did your team feel about it? You wanting to wear them? Were they not bothered? Was it just you being happy?
At first I was a bit like, oh gosh, everyone else looks more prepared than me. And then I realised, no, I'm going to do me, be me. And actually, nope, I'll rock the Flamingos. And then when I crossed the line first, I was like, it's definitely the Flamingo socks, guys.
That's so cool. So it seems like you're quite strong-willed and you'd stick to your guns with that one, which leads us perfectly on to our next question, which is about physical activity. And when it comes to it, what one emotion would you use to describe your relationship with physical activity? Again, sorry for putting you on the spot. Again, a bit of a one-word question. But I think what we're trying to do is put one item, one word, and see what people come up with.
I think I'd choose the word release. Many things, just because I can be really aggy and stressed in any walks of life and go and do kind of an exercise or my training, and I submerge myself in that and it kind of just takes me somewhere else. So it's like a release from daily stressors, whether that's, you know, I am stressed or just another load of endorphins. If I'm actually going along and I'm feeling good, got no stresses, it's just another release of happiness. So yeah, release.
Release is a great word because I think loads of people will relate to that, and people use it to escape as well, which is quite a similar word. They'll use it to escape from their day-to-day lives and it just gives you the chance to switch off if needs be. So it's quite interesting that you would use physical activity as a release when your profession is physically active. So it kind of sits hand in hand quite nicely. So how would you release in terms of training then? Do you feel like your training is your release from other aspects of your life, or do you do other things to release to outside of physical activity to help you release as well?
I'd say that I, because sport is no longer a hobby and it's my career, obviously things have to be more anal and more on point, and there is stresses that come with that. But the one, I think it comes from being a swimmer before I was a triathlete. I can be so upset, whether that's something's not gone right, something stressed me, someone's annoyed me. You put me in the pool and it goes away. I don't think about anything, just how it feels to glide through the water. And it's like a take me away from stuff. And sometimes it is the physical side of things that I need to release the stress. If it's a case of I've stepped away from my world of sport and I'm just being Lauren, you know, the girl that just loves to do all sorts of stuff. It could be to go out and do some dancing. It could be to socialize. I love being arts and crafts as well. So nice. I could just decide that actually, yesterday my dad was like, right, we've changed the color scheme in this room, can you please spray paint the picture frames black and the fronts of the desk? So I did that, and then he asked me to repaint the house thing out the front, and I realized that I'm sat there with the dog, I've got black paint and a paintbrush, it was sunny, it was beautiful birds singing in the back, and I was just painting, and I was like, I'm really enjoying this, like it's totally away from everything anyone would think. But yeah, being arts and crafts.
I'm so glad you mentioned your dog, because I was finding a way to mention it. Lauren has got a beautiful German Shepherd, and I do like it when you post. It's him, right?
It's a her, actually. She's just really hairy. Oh,
really hairy, big German Shepherd. Beautiful dog. So I'm glad we've somehow got into the podcast, because I didn't know how I was going to manage that. So, so you did mention it slightly, and it's a question further on, but I think it's a nice flow here. You said it's physical activity is now your profession. Do you remember the phase when it went from being something fun to do to actually becoming your profession? Do you remember that phase, or did it just naturally, it just kind of flowed into it?
I think that it naturally occurred. But what happened was, as you grow up, as you become more mature, you realize actually what you are doing, and that there's quite a lot of, not pressure, but expectations on your shoulders. And I'd say that that sort of hit me actually probably just before London, or when I went to university. You know, it was no longer something that actually I did it after school with a different group of friends. It wasn't, you know, I still was on Team GB back then, but it kind of got to that next level, and you're older and your body's changing now, so you can lift the heavier weights, you can get faster, you can mingle with kind of people that are a couple of levels above you. So I think it was more to do with maturity levels as it was than just kind of all of a sudden I woke up one day and I was like, oh God, this isn't fun anymore. I just have to do this and be the best and become the best possible motor that I can. I'd say that it came with maturity and realizing that actually there was an expectation to deliver, and, you know, people, British Triathlon, UK Sport, they were investing in me, and I was in something that actually, you know, when you invest into something, you want to get results back. So I kind of started to realize that actually I'm doing this not just for myself anymore, but for my country.
Oh, it's just so great to hear that. And in terms of that journey, and the bit that was quite interesting for me, because I like to look into the emotions of things, is you say your word is release. And so how did that pressure of feeling like you're doing it for your country affect your training, the reasons why you were training, the reasons why you love sport, in terms of it was a release for you? Did those pressures affect that at all?
In all honesty, it goes through a few phases, and it still happens today. I'm only human. I'm a girl at the end of the day. And I often find that when I'm doing a winter block of training, and you know, you can be slightly off your target times, you can adjust training slightly because you're quite far out from your race season, that's where I enjoy it the most. And the one thing my coach has really tried to do was we don't get so hooked up on plans and this has to happen, that has to happen, you should be at this target time by here, by then, because it can be demoralizing as well if you don't achieve what you need to. So instead, you know, we go out on masses of bike rides, as family bike rides. And often what he'll do is, you know, he would set some of the athletes off that were slightly slower ahead of us. And it's like they have to stay ahead and we have to catch. We might go half an hour later, but it's mixing training up and surrounding yourself with similar minded people. So I moved to Lanzarote last year and I had his son, who's on talent programs for British Triathlon, and he's an absolute animal. My coach himself was an ex-Olympian. So, you know, I'm doing good if I can beat him on a good day. Yeah, so it was a case of everyone's in there, and you can't turn around and be like, oh, I don't want to do this, can't do this, because someone else is there and they're pushing you and they're like, come on, we've got this. And I think that's what helps mindset go through it. And it's kind of got to the point now where, as an athlete, I'm so used to training that sometimes I need to feel that release as well. So although I'm like, oh, I've got four lots of 6 minutes hard run session, I know that at the end of it, I'm going to be like, I can go and eat as much chicken and roast potatoes as I want now. Like, this is amazing. I've worked hard. I feel good. I got the session done. So it's kind of like, it's part of me now. It doesn't feel like a separate part.
That's, these things are all so relatable. I think it's really great to hear, because they're the same reasons, and even the training sounds exactly the same. Like, I'm no high level athlete. I went to a local running club when I lived down south near Portsmouth, and it was exactly the same. I knew that there was people who were in slower groups and faster groups than me, and we set out exactly in the same way. I had to beat the group that was a bit, I had to catch up with them, and then there was people trying to catch up with me. So I understand exactly that, no matter where you are, that those motivations do work. And also the thought of, yes, even yesterday I wasn't going to do one of our workouts in the morning. I delayed it to the evening because I knew I was getting pizza that evening. So I was like, I've got to do the workout because I'm getting pizza.
Yeah.
But don't do the, and even though I knew other people were depending.
People probably think, you know, she's an elite athlete. You know, she must be motivated by gold medals and that. Sometimes it's the fact that I really love food. And when I get back and my Garmin says, you've burnt 1600 calories, I'm like, oh, like, I get to refuel myself, like, and eat copious amounts of food. It is the small things sometimes that, you know, get me through a session.
That's cool. That's cool. So we'll move on to some other questions now. So, because we've flowed quite nicely through, but one thing I would like to talk about is like your earliest memory. I think in terms of sport, and is there one point, we've talked about your kind of transitioning throughout your career, but is there an earliest memory in terms of maybe a success or a really early feeling where you've related towards physical activity?
Since being a really young girl, we weren't allowed Xboxes or PlayStations in the house. We were always encouraged to go outside the house, play. And I'm so grateful that my parents didn't put an Xbox or anything like that in the house, and I actually got an active childhood where I was outside making dens playing. So sport for me, like, some of my earliest memories are actually of playing netball and being team captain when I was in year six. That's like years and years ago, but I remember being in year six, being goalkeeper, I was captain of the team, and we won the local district championships. Like, and I used to live for sport. And even before I moved away and my swimming career kickstarted, I was captain of the netball, hockey and rounders team at my college. I literally, my mum would be like, oh, so what club are you at after school today? And I'd be like, oh, mum, it's netball tonight, but tomorrow I've got hockey. And she'd be like, well, when are you doing your homework? I'd be like, oh yeah, that's just after, like, well, you know. So sport has been everything to me. And then obviously swimming started to kind of become something I was really good at. And I moved to a boarding school, and the same coach coaches me now. And he sort of said, well, I know you're good at those, but actually you're here and you're on a scholarship and British Swimming are funding you. You can't go and play hockey. And if you get, you know, you break something, break your leg or something, it's going to affect your swimming. So then I had to make the decision, well, I'm going to be an athlete. I'm going to give it my all. So sport has just, yeah, I've loved it since being really young. And even in family time, we'd go outside, play a game of cricket or rounders, whatever it was, it's always been sport.
Amazing. It sounds like you've got a really nice, like, tight fit with your family as well. And they've seemed to have been really supportive and really to push you into physical activity. How have you found their involvement and your relationship with them in terms of sport?
I've been really lucky in that they've always been able to support me and give me the opportunities needed, whether that was swimming lessons or teaching me to ride a bike. All of these things have been, you know, amazing in getting me to the girl I am today. But I'd say the one thing that's been extra special is sport has always been my decision to do. My parents have never had to force me to do it, and they have at every single stage of my career, even today, say, if you want to stop and retire, we stand by you. And it's been great because I've known my whole time that I'm not doing it because my mum and dad told me to, or you need to do some exercise or this, that. It's because I wanted to. And I think that goes a really long way. Although I'm sure in lockdown, they're not enjoying me having me back home purely because I make them exercise. Mum was with me yesterday on her bike whilst I was doing my run session. I get my dad out now for 2-hour rides. I think they're going to be super, super fit by the end of lockdown.
That's awesome. So you're doing a bit to get them physically active. Are they not normally then?
Are they normally a bit more sedentary?
Just not to the same level.
Yeah, even yesterday I was at my, we were in the gym and I've got a new gym program to start up now for a few weeks. And I was like, right, come on, mum, doing a gym session. And I was like, she was doing some lunges backwards, but she wasn't getting to 90 degrees and she wasn't going all the way to floor. And I was like, that is a cheating backwards lunge. So you have to go all the way down near. And she was like, And I was like, come on.
So even at home, you're telling them off. So they, I guess in terms of the home dynamics, they must be pretty sick, like you said.
Yeah, I think that they'll be very, I don't think they'll be relieved when I go back, but they'll be able to be like, oh, I can have a bit of a rest. Lockdown's not been a rest.
Yeah, so building on from like family, what I like to do is ask people about the kind of things they've had to overcome. So we're going to talk a bit about barriers that you may have faced in terms of physical activity. So have there been any barriers that, in terms of your road through sport and into sport, that you've faced and you've had to overcome?
Barriers that I've, I guess, had that have potentially been there along the way, but when I look back at them now, they were just hiccups or small bumps in the road. I wouldn't say anything major. I've been very lucky and never had any injuries that have actually taken me away from sport. Starting out is always difficult financially as an athlete because you rely on your mum and dad a lot, and that's where I have to thank them for being able to buy £300-£400 swimsuits that actually only last for a couple of races. Like, it's pretty intense. And then that kind of, I managed to secure my own funding. I managed to get some sponsors behind me and I was able to sort of then push forwards. But again, that's always a worry for an athlete is, you know, how are you going to fund things? How are you going to get from A to B? It's not an easy or cheap career. So that was always been a barrier, but I've managed to overcome it. And then I'd probably say the other one is probably just your own mental demons. I would say that actually probably between Beijing and London, I dealt with a lot of mental barriers. I think I lost a bit of confidence in myself and actually didn't realize that at the time. Just thought, why am I not getting any faster? But it came down to being able to push into your zone that's not comfortable and being okay with stepping into it and being okay if you're going to try a new method and it does blow up. That's fine. Next race, you've learned from it. So yeah, I'd say that mentally I probably went through a learning curve as an athlete. And yeah, again, I've come out of that now. And once you've learned something and dealt with it, you know, you can move forward. So it's not a failure if you've learned from it.
So would you say that's one of your like keys to succeeding as well, is that you're quite mentally strong?
I think I've taught myself to be that, and it's not an easy one to achieve. I think lots of people in life have their own barriers in different areas. I literally now just go, right, I'm just going to give it my all. And if I land on my face, if I fall over, whatever it is, I'll get back up. But I'm going to try. And it's the same when I was on SAS. I decided that the moment that Ant Middleton said to me, go, I was just going to, whatever it was, the task, I was just going to go. Instead of going, oh my God, I'm about to fall out of a helicopter 20 meters up backwards. Like, no, just go. No time to think about it. All in, deal with the consequences after I've committed.
That's so cool. I'm just sort of looking at the questions and I think you're answering these amazingly well. So thank you. They really are putting the nail on the head. In terms of when you overcome barriers and when looking at those successes, how did it feel at Rio? Because of that silver, and you were aiming for gold, and you are a gold medal athlete in a lot of events. So how did that feel?
I was absolutely devastated over that race. I think again, I've learned masses, and going forward to Tokyo, you know, I'm right up there as one of the medal contenders again. But I feel so much more relaxed this time. Last time. I was the golden girl, poster girl, and I really embraced that and I enjoyed it. But I can remember 3 or 4 days before the race, it probably actually started about a few months out, being really, really anxious, and it would be affecting my mindset. And I can remember looking at myself in this pokey little hotel room, bathroom mirror saying, Lauren, you only have to do one more race, and this can all be over. You'll never feel like this again. You'll never have these emotions. You'll never be nervous. I was shoveling down Imodiums and it wasn't helping. I'd got myself into such a state. Obviously didn't do the swim recce because of the guidance and the water pollution. And I made that fatal mistake, which did cost me the gold. But at the same time, I was super, super proud of how I responded. Looking back, I don't even remember panicking. I literally just went, oh God, I've gone the wrong way. Got back to second by the end of the swim, and I pretty much burnt everything I had in that swim. Like, it's, you're in a wetsuit, 36 degrees, you know, good, let's see how this goes. But I could have not been on the podium at all in that race. And
that's what I was going to say. Achieving second, still pretty awesome at Olympics. So,
yeah, so
well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, I think in that race, I learned that actually how strong I was. And had I have not made that kind of fatal mistake, you know, it, what could have been would have been different. So it feels very different going in this year, well, next year now. And just feel like I'm, again, I've learned from it, a little bit smarter, maybe, if that's the right word. Yeah. So yeah, I learned from it moving forwards, and it's part of my story now.
And yeah, so exactly that part of your story, you can say next time when you obviously get gold, that you learn from this silver experience. And I still think getting in any race, I'm always the participation guy. So I'm always like, yeah, you're involved. Congratulations. Obviously, you're at the complete other end of the spectrum. But like, you've actually learned from it mentally as well as you're benefiting from it physically. So you're always learning in terms of sport. But to be able to do what you did, and the mental challenge of getting back, is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, so, and I think if I was just going to say, if I had to give one piece of advice to somebody that, you know, something hasn't gone the way they wanted it to, there is always a positive to take from any situation, whether it's the tiniest of things. Find that thing, hold on to it, because it wasn't a failure.
That's perfect. We are going to talk about a bit more, so we can go into that a bit more later. So you highlighted this earlier where you said in terms of your training, you weren't one to set goals, per se, like really strict ones. But do you see the next medal as a goal, or do you just see, or do you just know that you're an athlete, you're full-time, and you're going to focus on the next day? Because you always hear that in football, oh, we just keep our head down, focus on the next game. But I don't believe that at all. I think once you're in it, you kind of, it's always in your mindset. So it'd be quite interesting to see your thoughts.
Yeah, and I think maturing as an athlete, when I was younger, I probably would have said, oh, it's all about gold. Everything's to do with gold. What I've realised is that actually it's the journey to these things is more important as well, because the race just lasts for seconds, minutes. You know, I'm one race and it's done. And it's like, well, you based 4 years on that one race, right? Okay, cool. Actually, there's 4 years there that you were a human, you were growing, you had opportunities, experiences. So I'm learning to actually love and enjoy the journey each and every day, what, you know, what's coming in front of me. And then I think I still am going for that gold, and it means everything to me. Like, no athlete goes to a race without wanting to be the best and deliver the best race. But there's also a lot that rides on one race. And so if it gets to next year and I don't give the performance that I wanted to, or that I wanted to deliver, and everyone knows and God knows that I will do what I can to be in the best shape possible on that start line and deliver my absolute A-plus star race on that day. But it doesn't mean it's going to be mine to take. There are a lot of other factors in there. And I think when you get older as an athlete, you start to realize that, you know, you're asking yourself to deliver on an exact day, the exact performance, perfect conditions that suit you. I could get a puncture. I could overheat to the point that I actually fail. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong, and I don't want to be hard on myself, because I knew that I gave everything I could. And it's one thing I did when I was at uni at Portsmouth, was the first year of, I guess, being a fresher, was in that year was also London 2012. I didn't go out once, because I wanted to say that when I stood on that start line, it wasn't, you know, if I didn't perform, it wasn't for any other reason other than it wasn't my day to perform. And that is how I look at things going forward. And as long as I give my absolute best with no excuses, I can't ask for any more.
Must be quite hard, because I've been to university. I know what it's like in your first year. You want to go out and have fun. And especially I went to university in Bournemouth, but lived in Portsmouth for 5 years. I know how accessible the area is in terms of the nightlife, and it, there's so many different options of where you can go. So it must, having it everything right on your doorstep, it must have been a really hard to just keep your feet inside. What was it like with, were you in halls or were you still at home? What was the situation whilst at university?
So Portsmouth were actually, and still to this day they are, as an alumni, they still support me. I was in Harry Law Hall's centre of town, right near Guildhall. And I can remember one morning I would leave for training because we were in the water at 5 o'clock. I was leaving for training at 4:30. My friend Hannah came in with a massive pizza go-go box. She looked like she had a good night. And she saw, Lauren, and she gave me a massive kiss on the cheek. I left a massive red lip mark here. And she was like, where are you going? And I was like, well, I'm going out to training. You're coming in, but I'll see you at 9 for the animal psychology lecture. Yeah, see you then. I was like, okay, bye. And that was just my life. And they knew that, and they respected it, which was lovely. So, yeah.
So, yeah, halls must have been interesting. What was that like for your sleep? Was it okay?
Not good.
Were you not? I can imagine. I was trying to say that in a nice way, but it must have been awful to try to have a good sleeping pattern whilst in the halls first year.
I think my favourite thing was I don't even know what halls it is that's opposite Harry Law now. Someone from that halls would come over and set off the fire alarm in our halls. And then someone from our halls thought it'd be funny and go over and set. And it would go on for about 4 or 5 times. And you're getting up in the middle of the night, standing in the freezing cold, waiting for the fire alarm to turn off. But looking back, it really annoyed me at the time. But looking back now, like, it is quite funny. And I think it's an amazing memory.
It's just more obstacles. When we say, when you think of barriers that you overcome to train, you wouldn't necessarily think a halls of residence fire alarm at 4 in the morning. But it does happen. So
definitely.
We're looking at the other things that you've kind of done in the last few years, which is since I last saw you, there's been a few things which are maybe outside of your comfort zone. So maybe the Strictly Come Dancing or the SAS, did any of them feel like you were stepping out of your comfort zone? And if so, what way?
Both TV shows. So Strictly more so because I was put under the observation of 14 million people for a skill that I wasn't confident in. And I guess each and every week, you know, on a Monday morning, you'd be told that you're dancing the cha-cha or the paso doble, and you'd be like, oh my goodness. And then AJ would go through this routine. We're going to do this, and this. And I'm like, right. Okay. Yes. And slowly as the week went on, you know, I'd apply it like I was an athlete, try really hard. But that was really difficult because you can be an athlete and, you know, try your best, and you do perform on a world stage, I guess, but nothing to the scale of that. And I was, I guess, trying my best week in, week out. It wasn't a flawless performance. And that's probably what annoyed me the most, was I wanted to deliver an A-class performance, because as an athlete, it's like, well, that's what you have to deliver. So I think as the weeks went on, I got better and more used to it. And if I'd have continued, you know, I'm sure I would have got better and better. And then SAS pushed me outside of my comfort zone for a different reason than what I think most people do. Physically, I didn't find it that challenging or demanding, but that's just because triathlon is so demanding, and you go to places in triathlon that not many people go. It's such a dark place sometimes. What got me was, as an athlete, rest and recovery is key. So I, you know, always get a solid kind of 8 hours sleep a night. My nutrition, my fuel is on point. They were asking you to sort of do really big tasks and a lot of physical endurance stuff with broken 4 hours sleep a night. It was fine to begin with. I was like, I know what it's like to push through things tired. But then when you're coming to sort of day 5, day 6, and you've probably over 6 days had a total of about 10 hours sleep, it's like, nah, it's not so funny anymore. And someone makes a joke and you're like, well, it's not funny, is it? Like, because you've got no patience left, nothing. And you're on boiled fish, boiled kidney beans, boiled rice. And I was like, oh my God. And then one night they tried to, well, I did. We skinned our own rabbits, and we, like, me, skin a rabbit and then eat it. What is, like, so I was tested in a totally different way, and I actually loved it. So, yeah.
So that's great. Especially the Strictly Come Dancing. I'm thinking back to your one word that we said right at the beginning about release. Did it, because of the type of training it was different. and you had a quick time to perform from learning something's first time to actually performing. Did you still have that sense of, this is fun, this is a release for me? Did you have that throughout the new experience? Because I'm thinking many people would go into a new activity, might jump in, they want to feel the same emotions as something else.
What was beautiful for me was I actually got to be a really big girly girl. So I got to have the fake eyelashes on. I got to be in beautiful dresses. I got to have awesome hair styles, everything like that, which you don't get as an athlete. So for me, it was quite exciting to do that. Sometimes it was really tough training during the week because there'd be one move that you just couldn't get or it didn't work for you. But then AJ was always really good at thinking outside of the box and changing things. And probably Tuesday and Wednesday were the hardest days because you kind of have a little bit of the routine and it was coming together and then you'd forget a total another bit of it. Thursday, you've kind of actually can get the routine out totally, which is great because now you know you can remember it. And then kind of Thursday evening, Friday, you're like, right, I need to keep practicing to get all the little bits right, like where I look, where my eyes are, what toes are pointed, what's not pointed, the musicality. And then Saturday, you're like, well, I've definitely run out of time now to make it any better. So I need to somehow bring this up. So it was beautiful each and every week to go through an array of motions because you just knew that come Friday, Saturday, everything would be okay. But getting to that point was pretty tough.
So that's a really in-depth analysis of that. And it just seems like there's no real difference. It's just from something I'd say a smaller stage. And like the whole idea of the Humans of Fit like working out podcast is to say that no matter what the event is, if you go in there, you focus on it, you work hard and you don't overstress it and you just get to a point where on the day and just try and enjoy it. I think people can replicate that at any level and that's quite a beautiful thing to show. The SAS Who Dares Wins, do you officially win or are you inducted in? And what happens when I'm hoping that there's like a bar somewhere where you all just like get a pass to. Is that what happens?
Yeah, so I'm actually not going to Tokyo and I'm leaving and joining the Special Forces. So I can't say anymore. No. Obviously myself and Locksmith passed the course, passed out. I think it's just the fact that you've passed out, you get to take away. You don't get any sort of special bar entry, which would be very nice. I was very cheeky and asked for my number 7 and his number 6 and two of the jumpers that we wore and two of the trousers, and I framed it and I got a gold plaque written underneath that says number 6 Locksmith SAS Celebrity Champion 2019, and I did that for myself as well. So I made something for us because I think it's nice to have something on the wall that shows, you know, something you've done.
I think
it just comes with bragging rights.
Yeah, such a huge bragging right. And I would, especially with my friends, I would try to do exactly the same. But mine, I just like scored the last goal in a 5-a-side match. And I would bang on about it forever. But I would honestly, that both, all of your achievements, I would be unbearable. I don't think I'd be as calm and collected as you are right now. But so yeah, it's pretty cool. So we're coming to the end. We've got two more questions before the first one now is about, we've spoken quite a lot about your motivations, barriers, your emotions towards physical activity. And I think a lot of people will be fired up. Well, that's the hope, that's the dream, that someone listening to this who follows yourself or follows the podcast might say, yes, I want to do something. What would you say to that person to kind of give them that bump into activity now?
I'd say to them that you never know unless you try. And you, when it's a new task in front of you, it's going to be daunting. It's going to be, if you understand your reasons why for doing it, that will help you stay motivated. So it's easy to say, I want to lose weight, I want to do a marathon. Why do you actually want to do the marathon? And why do you actually want to lose weight? Work out what your why is first. So, you know, if it's to lose weight, why? Is that to, you know, look better in your clothes, feel better in your clothes? That can be your motivator then going forward, because you can, as soon as things get tough or you're like, oh, I don't want to do that, you're like, wait a minute, I remember why I started. And you can go, and as I mentioned at the beginning of that answer, was that you can start something, give it a go, and give it a good go, but you can always stop. So don't be afraid to start something, because it's not like a, I don't know, once you start, you have to continue. Like, let's just say I went and started Taekwondo because I'm a bit nervous, I've never fought before. If I don't like it after 4 or 5 weeks, I'll just say, oh, guys, sorry, this one's not for me. I haven't found my skill yet. I haven't found my sport. Go and try another one, because there's so many out there. I think the one that I do actually, when I finally retire from being a triathlete, whenever that will be, I will take up a martial arts, and I'd like to do more like paddleboarding kind of stuff, because it's outdoorsy. Mm-hmm. And actually after SAS, probably a bit more abseiling, but it's really scary and that sort of thing. But so yeah, just don't be afraid to push your boundaries, because you can always change direction.
That's amazing. I think I've completely relate to them, and I'm glad that you brought it back to say you do want to try martial arts, because when you said, oh, I don't like Taekwondo, and you might not like Taekwondo, I had a bad experience with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I didn't want to pick on the martial arts, but I like football and running and sports like that, and I tried to play golf and I'm awful, but I tried Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and someone actually, a sweat drop went from their head to my head whilst they were like pinned me down, and just the thought of that, I was like, oh no. So that would literally, the smallest things, like for me, like it meant crazy. But then I'm glad you're like, yeah, I want to try martial arts, because my friend Elliot, who'll be listening to this now, will be like, you're putting our sport to shame, because he loves it so much.
What got me in SAS was I've never actually been hit, and I've never hit anybody. And they actually put me and Anthea Turner against each other. You didn't see this because there wasn't enough time. But I didn't want to hit her, and I didn't want to be hit. But then Ant's going, you better throw some punches, otherwise you're going home. And I'm like, sorry. I hated it, absolutely hated it. But yeah, since doing it, I was like, I don't actually want to go around just throwing punches at people, but I'd really love to be able to defend myself. That's where I want to get to.
So is that, would you say is that one of your goals for the future? Is to do that, those different types of sports? Are you thinking to move into that just like as a, like recreationally, or you think, is that the aim?
Yeah, knowing me, I'll transfer and then decide that actually I want to go to Paralympics in it.
That's what I was thinking. So I've been highlighting the question because no. So that links quite nicely to something that we just didn't have space for earlier. So do you have any goals at the moment? What's your next goal that you've got for yourself?
I think I'd actually like to do a PhD. It's just finding where I'm going to do it and the time to do it. But that's actually just another personal goal away from the world of sport. Really love doing my undergrad and my postgrad. And I quite fancy Dr. Lauren Steadman. But I think you've got to be at the right stage in life to be able to kind of dedicate and give everything to a PhD. And I'm not sure right now if I'd be stretching myself a little bit too much.
I think it may be, but you've got Portsmouth University. They've just, I loved it, my time there, and I always talk about it with good memories, and they seem to have supported you so well over the years as well. So it must be good to know if you want to go into that, you could probably do it there, and you probably would, they'd probably manage it really well for you.
Yeah, they definitely would. They've been phenomenal in, you know, the whole way through. People questioned, oh, why are you going to Portsmouth? Why aren't you going to, you know, the likes of Loughborough, Bath, Stirling, where, you know, sports people go. Portsmouth offered me the 50-metre pool that I needed at the time. They had the gym facilities. The university itself were happy to, I think the actual year of London 2012, I was away in South Africa on our warm training camp, had two exams in the January. They got changed to coursework, and I can remember writing them in a separate room that British Swimming had set aside. And then I gave them to the lady, and it got taken away, and that's fine. And then the year of Rio, the day after I raced, one of my assignments was due in for my master's. And I was like, guys, wow. You know, I'm very good, but I'm not that good. And they said, no, it's fine. You can have an extension of 4 weeks. We'll submit that. And they did that. And I got back. I spent another 3 weeks working on this. It might have been my dissertation, actually. My dissertation was due then. And, you know, but there's not many places that would be that flexible and helpful, but they allowed me to achieve my academic career as well as my sports career. So, you know, they've played a massive role in my successes.
I love that place, and it sounds like they've done amazing, given you amazing support. So we're on to our final question. This is a something that we want to do throughout all of them is say, like the first questions, we want to ask about a inspirational dinner party. So you're sitting at your table and you've got three seats. You can have three people with you. These don't have to be in terms of just sport. It's just three people in your life who have inspired you. And just say, it might be a bit weird if they're all together, but I can give a little bit of example of mine. So mine would be my nanny Barbs. I love her. She's great. She supports me anything I need. Frank Lampard, Chelsea footballer, because I just wanted to score goals like him. And then Graham Hughes. Yeah, I never did score goals like him, but I just wanted to. And then the last one was a guy called Graham Hughes. He went round and travelled around all of the EU nations by foot without flying. And I just think he would have a lot of interesting stories. I think, and that's something I want to do. I just want to go around like the world and just experience all these different places. So they're my threes. So it gives you a bit of time to have a think.
Okay, so my first one would be who I think everybody knows that I look up to as a role model is Dame Kelly Holmes, purely because I was very young, probably about 8 or 9, I think. I haven't done the maths of how old exactly I was. I remember being at my grandparents' caravan over in Cromer and watching her do her two races. And I got really disappointed and angry at her at one point because she was at the back. And I was like, oh, you know, we're not going to get a medal. And then all of a sudden she just came through with absolute power, determination and true grit. And just she won two gold medals. And I was like, if you're going to do it, that's how you do it. And it made me think, I'd love to do that one day. Like, she's been amazing. So I probably have Dame Kelly Holmes. I would probably also have my own coach, Robin Brew, purely because my coach has coached me when I was 14 and he's still with me now at 27. And he's basically been like a second dad. And I look to him to be very true and honest to me, inspiring himself. I mean, the guy's an animal anyway, but the fact that I can still train with him and put out some absolutely massive watts on the bike, and his story, his journey, he went to Los Angeles for 200 meters individual medley, qualified and got the Olympic record in the morning, but missed out and come fourth in the final. And just listening to his story and how he dealt with that being so close, you know, I find that really inspiring. So yeah, my coach Robin Brew. And then the last one, which you didn't give me on any rules who I could have at the table, is, as you said, with your nan, my grandma passed last year. But I actually, if I could bring her back just for a tea party, I'd bring my grandma back because she was the first person who taught me to swim. She is the person that taught me to do all my arts and crafts, all my baking. So she played a massive role when I was younger. And my mum and dad were quite young when they had me and my sister. So we were basically taken to my grandparents every weekend, and we'd be picked up on Sunday. Best times of our life. Sweets and turkey Twizzlers, chocolate, you name it. Grandparents, woo! But yeah, so I'd have my grandma as well.
Cool. So just so we've got them all three around the table, can you say them all together, please?
I would have Dame Kelly Holmes, Robin Brew, and my grandma.
Awesome. I think you would have the time of your life by the sounds of it. You would have, I don't know what the first conversation would be, but you seem like you'd be really happy, which is cool.
I would be.
That's the podcast done. I hope you enjoyed that. We've hopefully worked out what's made you the athlete you are today and what's inspired you, what's motivated you, and hopefully motivated some other people to be physically active and do some physical activity. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys.